All right, welcome back to the show. Of course, my name's Darcy, and joining me as always is Jason. How's it going, buddy?
Good. How are things down south, man?
They are good. My daughter and I noticed tonight that when we got back from her Muay Thai, that it was still some daylight out. So we both celebrated a small little victory dance at the doorway there.
I know, when you can get home from work and it's not pitch black.
Right? And it's like, 6:30 when we got home. So, I mean, it has been, and it's nice to see some light at that time of day.
Yeah, but don't worry. A few another month and we had the old daylight savings time, we'll screw it all over for us.
Well, that's right. I think this weekend is set your clocks ahead on Sunday. So I don't know if that's Saturday night technically or like 2 a.m. Sunday morning or something. I don't know. But yeah, that'll mess me up.
Yeah. Kill off a few more people.
Yeah, that's right. I was really hoping that Alberta would get rid of that, but they just kind of bailed on that whole thing. So,
yeah, I know. Another great election promise gone astray.
Yeah, well, and it was like they did, public consultation and all this stuff, got all this feedback, and then just kind of, we're not going to do it anymore. And walked away.
It was over. Well, then it was overwhelming. There was an overwhelming number of people who supported the getting rid of daylight savings time.
Yeah.
And it was, from my understanding, it was companies, corporations that came in. And a couple of them were, I think it was the hockey guys in Calgary and Edmonton and the air people, airlines.
Really? Huh. Well, of course, corporations have the say, right?
Kind of blows my mind because I don't understand what the heck, how bad is Saskatchewan? Is that why they don't have hockey teams? Because they don't have daylight savings time?
Well, that's right. Oh, no. Well, it messes me up every, twice a year, too, because I travel through BC and Alberta and Saskatchewan every month. So for part of the year, I'm on time with Saskatchewan, but off when I go to BC. And then the other part of the year, I'm on with BC, but off when I go to Saskatchewan. So it messes me up completely. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous.
I hate it. But let's get into some Métis stuff tonight. We have a few stories. Kind of along the line of last week's episode where we talked about the MNC support of Justin Trudeau, the great and all-powerful man who walks on water in answer to our prayers, Prime Minister. We have David Chartrand and the MMF doubling down in their support of Justin Trudeau in the wake of Jody Wilson-Raybould's testimony. So I guess my first question to you, Jason, is did you hear any of the Jody Wilson-Raybould testimony, or did you have time to listen to any of that?
Not specifically. I did manage to skim through a few articles about what was going on and a lot of people's response, I guess, more or less to the outcome and seeing people's reactions to how this is all playing out.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. It was, it's kind of mind-blowing testimony, to be honest with you, because she kind of lifted the roof on all of it. And, and she made it clear that even though there was technically, I don't think, any laws broken, there was definitely some wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of pressure going on. And I find it very interesting that both the MNC as one national group and now the MMF doubling down are choosing to support the colonizing government over a former, assembly. I think she was an AFN regional chief. Was a crown prosecutor, an Indigenous woman. So I find it very interesting they're willing to just throw her out with the bathwater and support the colonial government rather than an Indigenous woman.
Well, we haven't seen much support from these organizations for anything Indigenous women oriented inside their own institutions as far as furthering any programs or services specifically designed for women.
Yeah.
So it's no huge shock that, just because an Indigenous woman held that portfolio and the government themselves is kind of trying to run over her with the bus.
Yeah.
There's no reason I would expect the Métis National Council and any of its affiliates to definitely come to her defense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I'm just kind of, I'm as we're speaking, I'm kind of scanning through an article and I know a lot of people are really being very supportive of Jody Wilson at this time. And I find it very, Yeah, I know there's some that still support the colonial government. We'll call those guys, I don't know, colonized. But I find that it's very distinct, the split between the backlash on what they've said as far as supporting Justin Trudeau compared to, like, a lot of people really want them to support Jody Wilson. And it's been online, and I've seen a little bit of on social media where people are very upset that they're supporting Justin Trudeau at this time. But, I mean, it's not really surprising. A, just follow the money path. But also, I mean, we're coming into an election, and these guys are in full-on get Justin Trudeau elected mode. And, I mean, it really shouldn't be any surprise to anybody that they don't back an Indigenous. I mean, they don't back First Nations in their own, you know, within that blue blob map. So I don't know why they would back Jody Wilson-Raybould. But a lot of people sure seem upset by it on social media anyway.
Well, and I think so. I think that it just goes to show that in the Indigenous community, there's not a lot of support from our organizations towards any one specific individual, no matter the circumstances they find themselves in, especially those in leadership. I find it a bit, you know, mind-boggling that our organizations, like the Métis organization, don't bat an eye when the people they're dealing with in good faith and for the honor of the crown are continually caught in acts of corruption.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I could understand maybe perhaps at first before her testimony, before really we knew anything of what actually happened, I can kind of see the original statement of, well, you know, people have been asking how this affects our, you know, the things that we've quote unquote negotiated with the government. And I could kind of almost see a statement there. But at this point, it's almost better just to not say anything than to come out and support the colonial government over the, you know, in my opinion, the very truthful words of an Indigenous woman. And what I find interesting is it's so clear that these presidents acting as in their dictatorship, you know, regime of power, absolutely don't represent a lot of the people that are within these organizations, at least not a lot of the people that are vocal about these kinds of things.
Well, and I think that's a lot of the challenge, though, as we've talked about over, you know, how many episodes, the real disconnect between leadership and what goes on the ground in the organizations. There's, from the community level to the administrative level, there's a big gap.
Yeah.
And a very deaf ear inside these the cartel organizations. I'm continually surprised, though, that they wouldn't come out and express some concern over the seriousness of these allegations. I mean, let's be really honest. If we were in the Stephen Harper era of politics right now and the blue machine was in full swing, what do you think the tone coming out would be from the Métis National Council and its affiliates regarding these allegations?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. Like, once she kind of testified and the words are out there and we've all heard what she had to say now, you're almost better just to retreat and not say anything and accept the fact that you made one statement, but that was before, so you can just kind of walk away. But they don't, it honestly, it just doesn't seem like they care. They're there to get JT reelected because they know that's where the gravy train is. All those promises for all those billions of dollars is on the horizon on the other side of that election. And so we really need a red government in the next election. And that's what they're focused on. And I think, unfortunately, in my opinion, that's really what this boils down to more than anything. I don't think, you know, the Queen herself could have walked in and said this was wrong. I think they would still side with JT just in an effort to get him reelected.
You're absolutely correct. That's what this is about. If the Conservatives were in and this was the allegations and they were staring down the barrel of four more years of austerity and, you know, being shut out of the halls of power, you can guarantee they'd be having some very strong words about the allegations facing the government now. So essentially what we can take away from this, or what I'm taking away from this, is they've been paid off. That's what this is about. Justin Trudeau has, you know, talked to the Métis people and their government and said, how do I best pay them off? So when election time comes, I've got them in my corner. And, you know, this whole business going on now is really inconvenient when you're in an election year. But the reality is the Liberal government should rest assured that the money is well spent with the Métis National Council. They reaffirmed that they are making sure their membership continues to vote the Liberal way, regardless of any allegations, and no matter how poorly they treat Indigenous people within the government.
Totally. Absolutely. I just was trying to think, like, you know, if JT doesn't get elected, and I think this play of using this funding first, I mean, it says a lot about this Liberal government when they make these promises that won't get put into place until after the next election. So that tells you a lot about, you know, the ethics and credibility right there of these people, that these guys, and, you know, Chartrand himself has said, or maybe it was Chartier, I can't remember now. One of them said that, they, you know, JT's the answer to our prayers and blah, blah, blah. But yet, what kind of person, you know, in a quote unquote democracy, uses things like, oh, well, we'll fund you after the next election, right? Okay, so, you know, this is waiting for you. I mean, that says a lot about the ethics of this government. And then on the other side of that, when you look at the Métis organizations, it says a lot about what their priorities are when a dollar sign is what gets them motivated. You look at the history of these organizations, they weren't key instrumental figures in the Harry Daniels case, you know, in any of these cases that went to the Supreme Court that got Métis rights, and the Powley case, they weren't key players in any of that. Most of the time, if they were players, they came in late to the game. So it just shows you, like, all they really are focused on is money. And you have specifically these two guys that have been in power for decades that have been, they're getting well paid and have been for decades and probably have pensions and all sorts of things set up. Meanwhile, there's Métis that are like living in shanties. So it's pretty sad when these people are quote elected to represent Métis people, but they're just kind of throwing Métis people under the bus. Like, well, if you don't vote for Trudeau, then I guess we're not going to get our funding and you can continue to live in your shanty. Like it's just pretty sad.
Yeah. And that's the huge disconnect, right? If you're at the community level, you have a total different kind of engagement in Métis identity and Métis politics and the Métis world, from the community to this, very lopsided administration. Boy, there's a huge, huge gap. And it doesn't seem that at any point, in any level, in any jurisdiction, that they can be held accountable.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's unfortunate because I see a lot of people, especially on social media, that are very upset with the things they're doing. But at the same time, when Chartrand ran in the last election, he ran acclaimed. There was nobody that opposed him. So, well, I have empathy for these people that are saying, you know, oh, these guys are all about money and they don't represent us. Well, then what are you doing continuing to be part of organizations that you don't agree with, that don't represent your values and your beliefs and don't seem to be doing much for you? I mean, there are other organizations out there. You can go start your own if you want. Why are these organizations so entrenched that people will allow this to go on? That's the question I always come back to with this stuff. And it just kind of almost makes me a little depressed.
Well, and I think that's it. I think that one of the big challenges, it's very discouraging because this organization is basically monolithic at this point. We have, you know, they have billions of dollars, you know, we have hereditary administration that can go unopposed and unchallenged. And let's be honest, what would be the point? Because they've been in there so long that their influence and the fingers, you know, of power go out so far that you really, I don't know how it would not, you know, have to overthrow everything. Would you have to replace the whole board? How many portfolios would you have to use flop over to completely new administration before you could really make headway? And then you're still hampered at the end of the day by the bylaws.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that's just it. And I mean, these guys have definitely gone out of their way in all of the, you know, the cartel organizations to ensure that their power and their authority and their positions are all very much entrenched, and as have made it almost impossible for somebody else to come in and win and beat them. You know, here in Alberta, you saw people getting turned away because conveniently they decided to do a membership review right before the, you know, a certain time frame before the last election and not notify people. So that disqualified people from voting and, you know, things like that. So they do these things to ensure that they keep power. And I just have to, you know, I always wonder, is that what Métis people want? Is somebody who's more concerned about their power and their own wealth, or somebody who perhaps actually cares about the people that they're supposed to be representing? And unfortunately, the answer is it's very clear that people aren't willing to change. They're not willing to leave these organizations. They're not willing to, you know, have a coup d'etat, so to speak.
Well, and it is. We've reached this static, you know, stasis where there's a, you know, a significant number of people now who are either shut out from the organization because of these reductive membership roll calls that we've talked about lots. And, you know, so it doesn't matter if you're disgruntled and you're inside the organization. It doesn't matter if you're now shut out from the organization. It doesn't matter what landscape you look at right now across the Métis homeland. There isn't a coalesced alternative.
Yeah.
And that should be alarming, since the vast majority of people who call themselves Métis and identify that way fall outside this organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A huge portion. And what I also found interesting about going back to their support, their full-on, absolute drop-dead support of the good old JT there, you know, within a day or two of them coming out, Chartrand coming out and doubling down and making more statements about how much they love and support Trudeau, and, you know, it just, I mean, I don't know if you could pry those two, their lips off JT's ass, but, you know, it'd be amazing to see that. But then we have the Honorable Minister Jane Philpott come out and resign, showing more dignity and more ethics and more moral character than these people that are supposed to be representing Métis people. And, you know, even she said in her letter, and I'm going to just read this, it says, "Unfortunately, the evidence of efforts by politicians and or officials to pressure the former Attorney General to intervene in the criminal case involving SNC-Lavalin and the evidence as to the content of those efforts have raised serious concerns for me. Those concerns have been augmented by the views expressed by my constituents and other Canadians." So I just want people to understand, and I'm not saying Jane Philpott's an amazing, wondrous human being, but let's just, that statement in and of itself kind of says everything that what I believe a person in a position like David Chartrand or Clem Chartier or, you know, Madam President here in Alberta, that's kind of the statement that I would expect them to make, is that those concerns, augmented by the views expressed by their Métis, you know, citizens, as they like to call them, should be where they form their statements. But they're just forming their statements based on what's best for them and what's best for their organization, the corporation. And that's it. And so I thought the contrast between those two was quite eye-opening.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. They're doubling down on their pre-election support. The government's money then is well entrusted in paying them off to basically pull the party line. And let's be honest, for good reason. There is a huge carrot on the end of that stick after the Trudeau government gets back in. And I'm really curious. You know, we're not that far away from an election. You know, if you look into the future, let's say the Trudeau government does get back in. What is their capacity to actually deliver then on all these promises?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's,
you know, this is huge financial obligations on the part of the Liberal government that is going to have to, you know, is going to be a huge item on the budget.
Oh yeah, like I can't. I'm positive that they're going to find some way to defer it off another year, or it'll be a reduced amount or something. Because yeah, they're just not going to start writing checks as soon as they get elected. I mean, they're going to have to, first off, if they do win, which even through all of this, I do still sort of believe that JT has another term coming. So if they do win, I mean, they're going to have to do some damage control. They're going to have to try to win people back a little bit. And I don't think writing big checks is what's going to do it at first. You never know, maybe. What I am positive of is that the organizations will definitely get their increased operating budgets. The salaries will definitely get their increases. Their travel and professional fees budgets will definitely get their increases. But as far as what actually people see in the community level, not sure when that'll happen. And I think if you were to ask any of these presidents, hey, when are we going to see this housing money? They'd probably have the same answer in a more political bullshittery way. But in the end of the day, it would be, well, we're not really sure. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's the whole problem with all these MOUs they're signing. You got framework agreements and you got all this kind of stuff, but it doesn't say on such and such a date, the check will be in your account.
Yeah.
You know, for these programs and services, it's just, you know.
Absolutely.
Paperwork with lots of words and very little teeth as far as actually delivering the goods to Métis people.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we've talked about endlessly before, I mean, what does all this funding mean? There's no specifics to it. What is funding for housing mean? Like, is that housing in Calgary, Edmonton, or is it, like, what housing? You know, like, there's no specifics. So it's just going to all be kind of laundered through the big machine of bureaucracy. And in the end of the day, very little, if any, is actually going to trickle out. So it's, but I mean, we've kind of gone on endlessly about that.
Well, and we have covered it lots. What I find tragic is that at the end of the day, we have government officials coming out saying that what's going on inside, this hearing and the evidence is being put forward is that they don't feel comfortable in holding their position. And even more, what speaks to me is the part where they're talking about, this is what's going on in my constituency. These are what the people who I represent are talking about. And I have to do, you know, the will of the people.
Yeah.
And you counter that directly with, you know, these Métis leaders who tout themselves as the government for the Métis people. You look at, you know, they're willing to say, well, we don't care what you're accused of. We don't care where your moral integrity is. We don't care how shady your business dealings are, as long as you send the money our way.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, when you talk about, I mean, I know that it is hard to sometimes take a stand when that money is definitely needed for a lot of things. But at the end of the day, they're not trickling that money down already. They already have multi-million dollar budgets, and yet there's still Métis that have no adequate housing. It's not trickling down to those levels. And so you throw more money in that, it's not going to make a difference. It's still not going to trickle down.
Well, and then you add on top of that, that this person was willing to resign their position, which is a cabinet position, which means it's got a paycheck attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
Of significant bonus money.
Yep.
And they're willing to do the right thing, even though it hits them personally in the pocketbook, because that's what accountability to constituents means.
Yeah.
It is sad that we can't look at any level of Métis government and find that same passion for making sure that the people are heard.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people have been comparing what Jody Wilson did to Elijah Harper back in the day. And for those who don't know, Elijah Harper is the one who basically kiboshed the Meech Lake Accord. He filibustered it essentially, and it, you know, because of him, other provinces refused to sign on. Well, as soon because it was a constitutional amendment, it has to be unanimous, and nobody, and with provinces not signing on, it failed. And that was because of Elijah Harper. And a lot of people are comparing what she did to that because of the level of integrity that it showed. And, you know, I want to talk about Jody Wilson-Raybould just a minute, because it's not like she came out and leveled accusations of, you know, absolute criminal code violations and all these things. She basically just came out and said, here's what happened. Here's my take on it. Here's how I felt when they said certain things. And here's how they responded when I questioned them about certain things. And when I listened to her testimony, the parts that I listened to, it wasn't like she was trying to just, you know, destroy Justin Trudeau or any of the liberals. It was more that this was wrong, and she felt that she had an obligation to come out and say what happened. And I totally agree with you. That takes she resigned from arguably one of the most powerful positions in the government of Canada, in the entire country. So guaranteed, that was a pretty decent paycheck. She resigned from that. She resigned from the Veterans Affairs when she was given that. I mean, that came with good perks and a great paycheck. And essentially, her political career now is kind of questionable because, you know, if she stays with the Liberal Party, she'll obviously be a backbencher. She's not. And so it comes with a serious demotion of salary, demotion of responsibilities, recognition. She was willing to give that up. Jane Philpott was willing to give that up. And like you said, it's sad that you can't expect the people that are supposed to represent, you know, Métis people to have that same level of integrity and ethics.
Well, especially when you look backward in time. I mean, you know, there's a lot of touting of, you know, our historic Métis leaders in the form of Riel and Dumont. And you look at the personal sacrifices they put on the line for the preservation and forward movement of the Métis people. Sadly, we don't have that kind of integrity, it seems, within the Métis leadership these days.
No.
We have a lot of people who are interested in paychecks. We have a lot of people interested in their portfolios. We have a lot of people interested in the titles that come with running these organizations, and very little to do with making sure that the poorest, the most disenfranchised, marginalized, and those still living on the roadside have a fair shake.
Absolutely.
At being part of the Métis Nation.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, part of the reason I called them the cartel and we started that was because that's how I really feel that they are. They don't seem to really care about the people. They care about the money, and they will step on anybody. They will walk on anybody's back. They will do whatever it takes to ensure that the corporation and themselves and maybe a handful of their friends are very well taken care of. And, you know, these are the people that are running these organizations. These are the people that are sitting in a room with the Prime Minister of Canada, quote unquote, negotiating on behalf of Métis people. People that, if Justin Trudeau said, here, I want to do this, they'd say, yep, because we fully support you. You're the best prime minister ever. I mean, when you have the attitude that he's the answer to our prayers, I don't think you're being an effective negotiator.
Well, I think that's the whole problem, is they have done all their negotiating. They have been promised all the money, and the conversation is over. And now it's about trying to make sure that, like we said before, Justin Trudeau's party gets back in for that next election.
Yeah.
Because that's where the money's all tied. So we really, you know, the leadership here now no longer really cares at all about who's best for the Métis people. It's about the funding is best for the Métis Nation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really too bad, because I do know there's a lot of people upset, but, you know, unless people actually start standing up to these corporations and these presidents, nothing's going to change. You know, I look at Alberta, and they're still sitting around waiting for the Métis judiciary to get reinstated, and nobody's really doing anything about that. I look at, you know, the Métis Nation of Saskatchewan, still a disaster and totally disorganized, and you know, nobody seems to be really pushing hard to get that straightened out. The MMF is just, you know, on track to rake in, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars. And the MNC is just sitting there raking in their cash. So, you know, who's being helped right now? Who in the last 3 years has, you know, been taken out of a poverty situation or really benefited other than your scholarships, your bursaries, and some you know, minor job training programs? Beyond that, how has anybody been helped? It's just beside me to see people sit around and complain about it. But when push comes to shove, you still had a very shitty turnout in the last MNA election. All of these elections, you have a very crappy turnout. Nobody seems to really go out and care. So unfortunately, there's maybe, you know, a handful of really loud people that oppose these guys. But for the most part, the membership just kind of says, yeah, well, do what you want. And I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if that's because Métis weren't forced onto res situations and, you know, we're living in cities and towns and I don't know. Maybe we're too enfranchised. I don't know where that comes from, where it's just like, yeah, whatever. Just do whatever you want, you know?
Huge disengagement. And we've talked about it a lot. And it's a riddle that, you know, how many episodes into this are we? And we still haven't been able to crack that nut, even ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
In the amount of listenership and support and, you know, getting message out there, you know, we've been at it for quite a while now. And, you know, it really does seem that Métis people have become disengaged on all fronts. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess moving on from there, because we've, you know, beaten that dead horse for a while, the government of Canada, in their wisdom, in the couple of days after all of this shit went down, they decided to announce that Bill C-92 was going to Parliament. And for those who don't know, Bill C-92 is an act respecting First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children, youth, and families. And that's what they say it is. And I'm going to try to find the response from the Métis National Council because I thought it was absolutely amazing. This is what Clément Chartier said. Time is of the essence in acting on the crisis of Métis children in care and ensuring the right of Métis governments to establish and maintain their own child welfare agencies. He went on to say the proposed legislation is a necessary and long overdue first step to achieve that. So here we have another first step. Isn't it nice we're taking all these first steps, Jason?
It's hard to believe that 130 years later, a formal Métis organization, that we can still do that.
Yeah, like that's amazing. And considering that, like, I think in BC, they handed over the Métis care, Métis children in care, or they're transitioning it over to the MNBC anyway, it's not really a first step, but eh, okay, I guess. But I know that a lot of, you know, First Nations and Inuit and things like that have really come out in critiquing this bill, because the first thing that I've heard a number of people say is that in the bill itself, there's actually no funding set for this. So there's absolutely zero funding for this transition of Indigenous children back to being in the care of their Indigenous families, so to speak. In the form of, you know, taking care of your own Indigenous children. So there's no funding. What does this bill do if there's no funding to do that? So there's no funding set aside for any First Nation, Inuit, or Métis organization to set up their own child welfare agency, as Chartier puts it. So what does this bill do? It really doesn't... It doesn't do much.
Well, come on now, Darcy. Stop being so hard on them.
Yeah.
They tell you, it's a first step.
Yes,
that's
right.
This is just the very first step on this journey to fixing the problem.
Yes, absolutely. Now,
maybe in 10, 15, or 20 more years, we'll have stepped the problem out. But right now, it's just the first step.
Yeah, just the first step. You know,
For more on first steps, please listen to our previous episode.
Yeah. The previous, 96 episodes? Just go find the first steps in all of those. The other thing that I've heard, too, about this is that it actually doesn't specifically say that Indigenous children must be turned over to an Indigenous organization or must be placed with Indigenous families or anything. It actually really doesn't change much right now, other than I think really when you get into the meat and potatoes of it, it says that if it's possible, maybe we should do that. But it doesn't specifically say, here's the line, Indigenous children are the responsibility of Indigenous and, you know, so on and so forth. It kind of just says, we should really be talking more with Indigenous folks about children in care. It's very vaguely worded. There's no specific funding set aside for it. But leading into an election as a wonderful and amazing first step, this is something where the Trudeau government can go in and say, well, but we did, we're trying to meet one of the calls to action from the TRC in addressing the issue of Indigenous children being overrepresented in care. Now, I guess my question to you, Jason, is how much would you trust putting a child, and I hate this term, but a child welfare agency in the hands of the cartel after everything we just talked about for 40 minutes?
Well, I think part of the problem is the government organization in and of itself is terrible. We have so many stories and cases of abuses of children and the horrific things that go on in there in care. And that's not even Indigenous kids. That's just all kids.
Yes.
Given the level of administrative capacity of the cartel to ensure adults, fully cognitive adults who are responsible, have their needs met, are looked after, are no longer living on the side of the road.
Yeah.
We have an organization that's now being funded to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, and they can't address needs like that. I'm not completely confident that they're going to be able to adequately handle such a delicate portfolio, to put it bluntly. We have kids' lives in our hands, and I'm not sure they've ever demonstrated the capacity to be able to adequately do a better job than the government, frankly.
Absolutely. And I mean, when you start putting logic to this and just starting to think about this, so right now there's a system in place, as crappy as it is, where you have all these social workers that work for the government and they apprehend all these children at willy-nilly and based on how they feel that day or whether they had a good coffee that morning. And I'm not even joking. So you have this kind of a system already in place. So, okay, let's turn this over to Indigenous people. That's a great idea. How many years is it going to take to get that same number of Indigenous social workers up to speed and educated and employed and departments built and policies formed and all of these things? How many years is it going to take to develop all that before you can really start to transition the work over? I mean, you literally can't just, hand over a bunch of files and be like, you guys take care of it. Have fun. See you later. And that's not how that's going to kill kids. So, with something like this, just logically, this is a 10-year plan at best. So if there's no specific funding set aside, that means we're not getting started on it right away. So how long do we wait until we actually see this? Or is this just more words? And one of the things I want to do is I want to read to you what, I guess a summary of Bill 92. Bill C-92 establishes principles that would include the best interests of the child, cultural continuity, and substantive equality. These principles would guide how services are delivered to Indigenous children in all jurisdictions and regions of the country, while aiming to reduce the number of children in care. So here you have a bill that is vague, doesn't really tell you specifics, and just from that doesn't say that it's actually going to transition this to the hands of Indigenous people. It's just going to aim to reduce them. Well, I think we've had many programs that aim to reduce these things as well. But, it seems like it's just another one of those like willy-nilly promises that'll happen in 35 years. Maybe, if ever.
Well, I think you hit a big nail right on the head there. Is not only is there not funding behind it, but the amount of administrative wherewithal and even language and program that would have to be set forward before you could even transfer one kid, even if you had the money. Yeah. How is the MNC going to create a program that's Métis-driven, Métis first, both cultural, language, and finally in the home for these kids? What have they done to demonstrate they have the capacity and are indeed taking up that burden?
Yes.
You know, they're not. And they don't have the wherewithal to do it. So the reality is, if there's no funding, then there's no one doing it. And you and I both know you don't come up with that in an afternoon while you're sitting at Starbucks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, then, yeah. Yeah. And then there's the fact that a lot of these are probably going through the court system as we speak, which means you're not going to transition those ones to a new caseworker, a new organization, a new everything, because then you have to restart the whole process again. So this isn't a short-term solution at all, by any means.
No, not in any stretch. This is something that's going to take years at the rate that these organizations move and their commitment level, and especially since they don't move unless it's tied to funding. So these kids who are in care right now, whether they're First Nations or Métis, are going to be there for a long time because these organizations don't have the wherewithal to do what's best.
Yeah. Well, and just a thought I had while we were talking here that is kind of scary, to be honest with you, but let's say, for example, you transition this over. So let's say you had a 10-year plan and you had it laid out and you had a process by which it's going to transition from here to your hands and we're done. Let's say you have that. Okay, now how do you fund Métis child welfare programs? Well, you fund them based on the number of kids in care. So now you have essentially a privately funded, or, well, a publicly funded private corporation that's running your child welfare. And so they get paid based on the number of kids in care. I think that's a very, very, very dangerous slope to go down when unless they have the full plan that they don't want this to be part of their portfolio, so they're going to try to eliminate this avenue of funding. And I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, to these guys and ladies that are in charge of these organizations, money is everything. And so if you say, well, you know, if you have, you know, 1,000 Métis kids in care, well, you're going to get X amount per kid. But if you only have 10 in care, you're going to get X amount per kid, but that's going to be a substantially lower amount. It just scares me to think that we're putting a price tag on children and handing it over to an organization that I already have questions about their morals and ethics.
Well, and I think you're right. What organization anywhere, regardless if it's Métis or not, purposely sets out to eliminate their own existence?
Yeah.
That's what we're really, our expectation should be, is through proper funding, through proper administration and programs and services applied to this issue, our need for kids in care would go down.
Yes.
But then we're asking an administration, we're going to set up a department with funding, with all the backing for its sole purpose to basically eliminate itself.
Yeah.
You know, that never works. In this day and age, is that a job you'd sign up for? Your job, Darcy, is in 5 years to put yourself out of work.
Exactly. Well, and especially considering you're going to have to train and hire and wait for people to go through the education system to become, you know, registered social workers, licensed social workers. you're going to have to wait for that whole process only to then tell them, oh, by the way, now that you graduated and you got a great, got a job, yeah, it's only, we want you to eliminate your job. So work really hard at that. That yeah. ain't going to happen.
So we, yeah, well, that's all. Even if it's downsizing. So we put 100 people, 200 people through to administrate this program so that in where our hope is that we need less than a third of those people within 10 years.
Yes.
Well, why did you go to school?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, these are the same reasons why we will never, ever be eliminating, you know, Veterans Affairs or INAC or CERNA, whatever the hell they're called now, and those departments or portfolios out of the government. It's because none of the people there want to eliminate their own job. So they're not going to actually solve Indigenous problems, and they're not going to solve veterans' problems or the problems that their agency has created. They're just going to keep kicking them down the field, the kicking that ball down the field so that they keep stay employed. Because most of those people get pensions and their livelihood is based on whether or not veterans are getting screwed over out there or Indigenous people are getting screwed over out there. I just don't think when you have people that are so colonial in mindset and have the dream of becoming as bureaucratically and nightmarish as the government of Canada has become, when you look at these cartel organizations and their dream of being that, I just don't feel comfortable about giving them vulnerable children to then take care of. I personally don't feel comfortable with that.
And then you couple that with the fact that I think it is falsely set up with, you know, poor parameters. You know, you're setting this up to fail. Yep. You're setting it up so that the crisis isn't reduced, the real problem isn't solved. And so you just continue to put a good smiley face Métis sticker on it saying, see, well, oh, it's all Métis people running it. It's all Métis protocols in place. Yep. Therefore, it's all good. No, you still got kids in care.
Yeah.
That's the fundamental problem we're not going to be addressing through this handoff is, sure, it'll be by Métis people for Métis people. We're not addressing the fact is, why do we got kids in care?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and that's really what this boils down to when you talk about children in care. Why are children in care? Children, Indigenous kids in this country are in care because of things like poverty, substance abuse issues, things like that. And I'm sure there's a plethora of other reasons as well that are, you know, normal standard things that happen, you know, all over the country and all different types of ethnicities. But the truth is we have fundamental issues that the government of Canada is responsible for creating the problem. And now the government of Canada is going to hand the problem back off onto Indigenous people, but not provide an adequate way to resolve it, to reconcile that. It's just kind of like, well, this is a shit sandwich, so we're just going to hand it off to you guys and hope hope your thoughts and prayers can do better than we can. But at the end of the day, that's what this boils down to, is you're just handing off kids to another organization who's probably going to have to work in the same parameters, and you're not solving the reason those kids are in care. And like you said, that's really what this boils down to.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. And again, that's what this is really all about. And this is why I think that there has to be a broader conversation. Kids in care, and when you're talking about Métis children, is a problem almost solely responsible by cause and continuation by the government.
Yeah.
By them kicking it to us and saying, well, here you go. Here's some money, maybe. You create your own programs and services and that are going to satisfy your need to have your culture and language and heritage preserved with kids in care without ever taking responsibility for how they got there is really doing Métis people a disservice, because we're still left trying to pick up the pieces without ever actually being able to go in and address why they're in care in the first place.
Absolutely.
And so at one hand, it's a good start. It's a good first step. But the reality is you're holding a steaming pile of dog crap that you can't get off your hands.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. It's, you know, once again, Indigenous people are left to clean up the mess that the government has created. And the government continues to create. So we're not even stopping the reasons why a lot of these kids are in care. We're just continuing it but expecting a different result by changing one little aspect of it. And I mean, that again is where I would have maybe expected responsible leadership to come out and say, look, we will take those portfolios. Absolutely. We want to be involved. We want to have authority to step in when we feel we need to, or whatever that authority looks like. However, we need to address these major issues as well in order to reduce the number of kids in care. Because to me, what this really says to me is that we're not really trying to reduce the amount of kids in care. We're just trying to make it look better and look like we're trying really hard to do it. And it's unfortunate because the ones that suffer here are the kids in care. And they're the ones that are going to continue to be abused, are going to be continue to commit suicide, continue to be traumatized, continue to be kicked out at a certain age and left all alone in the streets. And, while these presidents of these cartel organizations and, Minister Bennett and Justin Trudeau go home to their families in their nice warm beds and sleep on their nice soft pillows every night. And, so I personally, I wouldn't trust the cartel organizations as far as I could throw them, and which isn't really far.
I think on a closing note on this, what really concerns me at the end of the day is that given the fact we can't address the root of the problem, what's going to happen is exactly my fear, Darcy, is when you get kids who are further traumatized because they're in care. Or some other, unforeseen, something bad happens to these kids in care.
Yes.
The government's going to come back, and the greater Canadian society at large is going to say, well, look at this Métis organization mistreating these children. Mm-hmm. They were put in this Métis care because it was supposed to be culturally sensitive. It was supposed to have, all the things that they needed to avoid that.
Yes.
And I think the reality is it's still going to happen because the institution and the framework is the same, and we can't address the root cause. And so when kids phase out of the system and are left with nowhere to go, who's going to be looked as the scapegoat? Well, the Métis organization and the Métis people are. And it's a setup to incur the same wrath, all the same aligning of character that we now put on the colonial institution.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's a huge fallacy to think that we're going to somehow, with the same constraints, budgetarily, administratively, socially, we're going to somehow succeed where they're failing right now.
Yes. Absolutely.
All we're going to end up doing is taking the blame.
Yeah. And that's a very good point. I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's a good way to kind of close it out, because I absolutely agree with what you said. It makes me real nervous when they start talking about this children in care like this. So I don't know, but I guess we move forward. I mean, it is a good first step, right?
Good first step. Probably you and I will be long gone before we actually ever see one kid in Métis care.
Yeah, more than likely. More than likely, absolutely. Well, I think for tonight, that's probably all the ranting that we need to do. I don't know if you have any last final thoughts, random thoughts, anything that you want to get off your chest, well, Jason?
I'm hoping the weatherman isn't lying to me, because I heard that we might see the plus side of the thermometer by the weekend.
Yes, I know. I've been checking that out because of my traveling and even here at home, and I'm very excited for pluses.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that's going to feel like. These shorts and t-shirt weatherman, I'm going to have to find my suntan lotion.
Yeah, right. All right, well, I guess that's all we got tonight. So if you guys make sure you head out and check out our stuff on social media. Make sure you like and share everything, obviously, and same thing as always. But, until next week, until next Tuesday, when we'll have more ranting and raving to do, I think that's all we got. So until then, the jig is up.
You are the spark that's starting a fire that will spread across this land. And it will be a fire that doesn't burn, but a fire that cleanses, a fire that ignites in our hearts. and creates light.